The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Hello and welcome to the Umpire Roles midweek preview show with Jonathan Lowe. So how are you doing, John?
Hello, yes, all good, thank you.
Yes, so we managed to pick up a point just looking back quickly at the game at the weekend at the City Ground. Kind of, I thought it was still a positive result, but it's really got mixed opinion.
Yeah, I think, it is a positive result. It's a point in the right direction. Should they have won the game? Yes, they probably should have. But did they do enough to win the game? I would say no. I disagree with what Veljko Paunović said afterwards. He said they kind of created plenty of chances and they should have won the game. I think point was a fair result. Forest had a few good chances, Reading had a few good chances. I wouldn't say they peppered Rhys Samba in the Forest goal, which they probably should have done given his form against Reading. But I think 1-1 was a fair result. There were spells in the game where Reading were on top, then Forest came back well, took their opportunity, and Reading came back. It wasn't anything special the game. I think overall, in the grand scheme of things, it's a good point in the right direction. It keeps the unbeaten run going, and it strengthens the top six for hopes for a top six finish. So I think all in all, it was just a solid point.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if we'd have come out of that game and not managed to pick up a point, it would have been absolutely horrible, because we did have a lot of shots. You're right. Samba didn't have many saves to make, which was very unfortunate because he absolutely must hate playing against us. I think that's four games in a row now when he could have done a lot better on every single goal. But I don't know. A big positive for me was Yaku Meite coming back into the team, because he could be a huge influence and maybe a person that might suffer with his return from injury is George Puskas, who missed a glorious chance just after the first goal for Forest.
Yeah, slightly worried about Yaku Meite, because I remember the last time he came on with half an hour to go at Stoke, he then got his groin injury. So let's keep our fingers crossed and touch wood that he's okay. But yeah, it's great to see him back. He's obviously, we all know what a lively, bubbly character he is to have around. Sure, he does wonders for the team spirit and produces on the field as well. And good goal. I mean, Samba should have done better. I haven't actually seen a good angle of the goal, but it certainly appeared to go through him. If you don't shoot, you don't score, and he does that. He had a couple of other opportunities as well, got in behind the defence. And he's going to be a real asset over the next couple of months. And yes, probably the person going out of the team is probably going to be George Puskas. Unfortunately, he had that big miss really straight after the Forest goal, where I think he should have done better. He looked at the ground as if to say there was a bit of a bubble. I don't know whether that was the case. I think it was just more of a frustration on his part. And other than that, he didn't do a huge amount. He had some nice touches and everything, but that really good game he had a couple of weeks ago, I think, was it against Blackburn? I think he did very well. That's where he has really impressed. But since then, past couple of games, he's been okay, but nothing too special. So hopefully, Meite and or Puskas can really kind of kick on these last 10 games and give the support that Jao needs and give the team the goals and assists they need to get over the line.
Yeah, you mentioned Lucas Jao there, and he had a really kind of mixed bag of a day, didn't he? Outside the box, he was absolutely fantastic. And no more than when from the equaliser, when he some really impressive hold up play links it to Meite. But in the first half and in the second half, in front of goal, I don't know what was going on with him. I mean, we've seen him score some incredible goals, but it seems to me that when they're actual sitters, it just all goes to pieces, doesn't it, sometimes with Lucas? We love him. He's been brilliant, but he has got that weakness in his game sometimes.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like when he has to just think that split second to think what to do. He struggles to get a clean connection or for whatever reason. And obviously we saw it in the first half with that corner kick routine with Elise and Tom McIntyre, and that would have been a lovely goal here. I mean, all he had to do was kind of stroke the ball into the net, but to somehow hit a standing foot in the net and sort of trickled onto the post, and he ran into the post, and it was all a bit chaotic at the end. And they had a few moments in the second half as well. You know, obviously the defences are getting round him, and opponents are making sure he doesn't get much time on the ball. But when he is kind of on his game, and yeah, like you said, around the edge of the box and in the sort of middle third of the field, he's pulls off some really nice moves. So yes, it's not really falling for him at the moment. I wouldn't say it's kind of panic stations. Panovic said post match that he can still give something to the team, that there's still more to come for him. It's not a case of, what was it, 21 goals and it's kind of season done for him. He can still do more, he can still push more, and hopefully he can get a few more important goals between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we can just get him in any reign of kind of like a form when it all comes together, the whole team will just transform. Because if we can get that moment when he goes back to the start of the season, which is possible because there are definitely signs that he could get back there, we're going to be absolutely fine. We're not doing too bad anyway. I mean, we're 4 undefeated. But the manager seemed particularly unhappy after the match. She's saying it felt like a defeat. I can get that after the performance, but how did you feel that we should look at it, maybe, John?
I think it was just one of those games where neither side did enough to win the game, basically. A point was a fair result, and had Reading won, it wouldn't have been deserved, but they'd be two points off better in the league table, but I think they'd still be fifth. So in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't make a huge amount of difference. Forest were very uninspiring, I thought. Obviously, Chris Hughton has gone in there, had a bit of a slow start, but has kind of made them solid, hard to beat, you know, all the cliches, and got them to safety, which is his number one aim. But there was a lot more to work with from a Reading perspective, I feel, compared with Nottingham Forest. And obviously, hopefully, the likes of Andy Rinomata, Michael Morris and Ovie Ejaria back maybe on Wednesday night, if not on Saturday, then Reading have got a few more strings to their bow. So I think, it's another step in the right direction without being too spectacular.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's one of those points that you look back at the end of the season. It might be a vital one. You never know. Yeah. So we go to the Birmingham City on Wednesday night. Now, they are in a little bit of a flux right now. It looks like Aitor Kurenka will be leaving. It seems almost certain that Lee Bowyer has already left Charlton Athletic and is being... Well, let's just say I wouldn't be surprised to see him there. I don't think they'd be taking any bets at the bookies now, will they, Jonathan, on him becoming the new Birmingham City manager?
You're making an assumption that 2 and 2 equals 4 there.
I am indeed, yeah.
Yeah, I think as we were saying before this podcast, that had Kurenka still stayed in the job, that would have benefited Reading. Even so, they're a very poor side, or they've been very poor large parts this season. Although they did beat Reading, didn't they? So that's maybe some added motivation for Reading to get some revenge, because Boeing have been very, very poor this season. So they're on a very poor run, and Reading should have enough to win the game. But we all saw with that Wigan game a couple of weeks ago that anything can happen in this division. And if Reading are not on top of their own game, then they'll have some problems. And clearly now with looks like Lee Bowyer is going to be taking over, you wonder if they're going to have that new manager bounce, whether they're going to have some just a change in luck in front of goal. You just don't know. So it'll be a difficult challenge for Reading, certainly. But they've still got some very strong players who can make an impact. Having made it back as well is obviously positive. And I imagine if they get the first goal, they certainly won't lose the game. You know, if Birmingham get the first goal, then I imagine they'll probably just try and shut up shop, and it'll be a case of whether Reading can break Birmingham down or not. But yeah, I mean, Reading, in the grand scheme of things, should have enough to win that game.
Yeah, I would like to mention the home game earlier in the season. That's when Lucas Jou missed the penalty. And also, Yaku Mate went up for that challenge in the last minute to get a ball, which the goalie clearly caught. And we've suffered since then. Both those players have really been on and off. But I'm confident that we can beat Birmingham City tomorrow. They've got the worst home record in the whole of the Championship. I know that's setting off alarm bells. I know. We've been here before, haven't we, with the Wigan game when they were terrible. But what would your scoreline prediction be, John?
I think I'm going to go for a 2-1. I think it'll be actually quite a close game.
Yeah, I think it'll be a close one as well. I'm going to go for a 1-0 because we don't look like we're going to score many goals at the moment, apart from the Forest game. But overall, I think I'll take that. I'm going to say Lucas Jou to score. I love the man. So I want him to do well. So cheers. Okay. Thanks a lot, John. And now it's time for the opposition view with Alex.
I've been joined now by Gab Sutton, EFL journalist and Birmingham City fan. Gab, how are you doing?
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
I'm very well, thanks, Alex. It's good to chat to you.
It's a pleasure to have you on. Just as a precursor, we are recording this on Sunday afternoon, and it looks like Aitor Karanka probably won't be in charge of Birmingham by the time we actually get to this game on Wednesday night. Gab, what's your instant reaction to that news?
I'm not surprised. I think a lot of people, when Karanka came in, were quite excited. He had won promotion from this level before with Middlesbrough. They had an amazing defensive record that year, and I think a lot of people hoped that he'd tighten Blues up. And I think, you know, we saw elements of that initially, but then as the season went on, a lot of long balls, a lot of the time Scott Hogan was actually favoured up top rather than the target man presence of Lukas Djukovic. And I think playing long ball to Scott Hogan isn't really the most appealing playing identity in the world. And I think on top of that, a lot of rotation, especially in the midfield area, which is odd considering Karanka in a lot of games was quite late to use his substitution. So he was quick to rotate between matches, which I can kind of understand given the fixed congestion that we're having in these unique circumstances. But there's a lot of games that kind of drifted away from Birmingham this season, and Karanka hasn't been quick enough to react. And yet he's changed things left, right and centre in terms of the starting 11. So it's been a disjointed reign. It hasn't been a particularly happy reign. Lots of issues at Birmingham in terms of off the field and the structure at the club and whether there's a clear sense of direction. But I think Karanka has to take responsibility as well for the way the season panned out.
Yeah, he's only been there since the beginning of August, so what's that, 9 months or so roughly. And as you said, the whole reputation that Karanka has is around his defensive stability, and he got Middlesbrough promoted with conceding very few goals. But Birmingham have really struggled this season at the back, and especially late in games. They've conceded a lot of goals. I think it's 16 in the last 10 minutes, or 16 in the last 15 minutes, and then 11 of those have come in the last 10 minutes, which is like more than any other club. Do you think that's a matter of like fatigue or focus, or what do you reckon that kind of late amount of goals going in against Birmingham has come down to?
Well, I think you've kind of made a very important point that we've not been good defensively, and I think the poor football would be more palatable if we were a solid, efficient side that finished in mid-table and could maybe push on for next year. But I think we haven't been solid at the back. I think, yeah, you're looking at players like Harley Dean. He's got sent off, of course, in the reverse fixture. A little bit rash at times, and there's a lack of stability in midfield where Karanka has experimented with all sorts of different combinations and hasn't really settled on any of them. So I think, yeah, really there's been a lack of tactical consistency there, as well as the lack of a clear playing identity in possession. And, you know, you look at people like Neil Etheridge, he looked like a good signing. He started in good form, but his form's kind of dipped over the last few months. So, yeah, a lot of problems all in one, really.
It does seem like there's a lot of championship names in that Birmingham side. Gary Gardner's still there. Zukovic is still there. Etheridge is there. Scott Hogan. There's a lot of names who I think fans would look at and say, oh, they could definitely do a job in a championship team, but it doesn't seem like Karanka's managed to pull them together into a team which is able to produce results, really. And that is kind of mirrored, well, not mirrored, but that is kind of amplified by when you look at the home league table this season for Birmingham, and they've only picked up 12 points at home all season. Whether this is just random or something else, I'm not really sure, but their home games this season, they've been incredibly, incredibly poor in. And do you think that, like, there's a reason that Birmingham have been quite so bad at home compared to on the road?
I don't know. No, I mean, I think that there's one theory that teams like Birmingham and Sheffield United have suffered the most since lockdown happened. And I suppose one theory, I'm not sure whether I subscribe to this myself, but there's an idea that clubs with kind of, relatively speaking, quite working class fan bases maybe rely on the support maybe a little bit more than other clubs. And there's a possibility of that, I think. But then, of course, you've got to remember that 13-14 season when Birmingham didn't win a home game after the 1st of October. So you've kind of got to weigh that in as well. I think the squad there, as you mentioned, I think probably there's an argument to say it should be a little bit better than where we are. There's players like Ivan Sanchez who's shown some, you know, glimpses of technical ability. Jeremy Bayer had a good season last year. Karanka's used him as more of an inverted left-sided player. Lilovic is supposed to be quite skillful. Maxim Collin is a right back. So it's, you know, there's flashes of potential in that squad, but they've just not really gelled as a unit. So I do think that a lot of the blame for this season got to lie at Karanka's door, really.
And then obviously with Karanka now potentially leaving, Birmingham have got 10 games left to kind of save themselves this season. If you were to pick a manager who's available right now to come in and try and keep Birmingham safe, I mean, at the moment, I think they're in 21st place, so just outside that relegation zone. And Rotherham obviously have got a lot of games left to play. I think they've got 4 games in hand on Birmingham now. Which manager who's available would you like to come in and kind of see replace Karanka if he is to depart tomorrow?
Well, I'm a massive fan of Ryan Lowe at Plymouth Argyle. I think whichever championship club gets him will get a very good manager. He's kind of someone who likes an expansive 3-1-4-2 setup, and I like the idea of kind of playing two up top. And that's one possibility that I would be quite open to. But at the same time, probably not something the board are going to take. They're probably going to want someone with a bit of championship experience. I think Neil Harris would be quite an obvious pick. He's second favourite for the Portsmouth job at the moment. And I like Harris as well. He did a good job, I think, at Millwall. You know, a bit more direct, but I think with a bit more of a high pass, a bit more aggression than maybe Karanka's teams go. So I'd be open to Harris, but as an outside chat, possibly Ryan Lowe.
I think I think Harris is the kind of obvious choice when I like looking from an outsider's perspective, given his, you know, style of football that he played with Millwall and then even Cardiff to an extent. Very direct football, and I think it would probably suit the players you have in the squad still, especially, you know, as you said earlier, you've got Jukovic, who's a main target man. He's only actually scored 2 goals this season. I think that would probably, it's probably going to surprise a number of our listeners that he's only scored twice this season, because he's often the name you associate straight away with Birmingham City, especially for goals. But Birmingham really struggled as well going forwards. I know we said they struggled at the back, but I guess this is one of the problems you've got when you're sitting in 21st, you can be both bad at the back and also going forwards. And your top scorer is Scott Hogan this season. He's got 6. But then outside that, there's a lack of goals all over the squad, really, with only 2 other players getting to 3 goals and one of them being a centre-back in Harley Dean. Do you think it's a lack of chance creation from the style of play that Karanka has played this season? Or do you think it's just that the players you've got just aren't really taking chances?
Yeah, I think that's a big issue that you mentioned. I think away to Barnsley in the game we played just before the 3-0 loss at Bristol City, it wasn't like there weren't many chances for either side. But again, the two chances I think Blues had were for Harley Dean's headers. And Harley Dean, he's very aggressive, but he's actually, I think he's 5'11" or 6 foot or something like that. So it's not like a Jake Cooper type situation where you can really rely on someone to be that aerial reference point from set pieces and long throws, because he's not a tall player. So I think that would be a worry, relying on someone like Carly Dean as one of your higher scoring players. So a bit of a concern there, I think. I would imagine that if we did appoint someone like Harris, he would probably move us towards maybe a 4-4-2 with Djukovic. He had at Millwall, he had 4-4-2 Steve Morrison, who's the target man there, and Lee Gregory. And I feel like Djukovic could form a similar type of partnership with Scott Hogan and be that sort of target man, and then use Sanchez and Bayer sort of maybe wide in a 4-4-2, and then have a couple of ball winners in midfield, perhaps. That would be the thinking, I think, that Harris would go with. And I suppose that makes a bit of sense, is because if you're going in a relegation battle, confidence is low, so sometimes the more simple way of playing can work better. So it's important that we get this next appointment right.
Yeah, and I mean, as you say, kind of simple is almost best, right? And going back to basics and trying that 4-4-2 with big man, I say little man, I'm not sure Scott Hogan's really classed as little man, but you've got that potential partnership there with two strikers who could do a job up front and keep you guys up. Obviously, it's not the first time that Birmingham have kind of been threatened with relegation. I'm talking a few years back here, but looking at that 13-14 season, Birmingham obviously went into the final day with a particularly big task on their hand away at Bolton, find themselves 2-0 down with 20 minutes to go and managing to keep themselves up. Do you think that it might come down to the final day this season, or do you reckon that Blues might pull themselves safe before then?
Well, the other possibility is that we're already relegated before the final day.
I tried to keep it on the positive side there for you.
But... Cheers, Alex. I appreciate that. Listen, I think it is going to be touch and go between ourselves and Rotherham. I feel like Chester Wednesday will go down. Speaking to Wednesday, they seem very pessimistic about their chances. They lost to Norwich earlier today, of course. So I think it's kind of between ourselves and Rotherham, and whether a Coventry or a Derby could plummet enough, I'm not so sure. I suppose we're only 3 points behind Coventry, so you can't rule out that possibility. But I would imagine it's going to be touch and go between ourselves and Rotherham between now and the end of the season. So, yeah, that looks like the likelihood. I feel like we've got a better squad in terms of technical ability than Rotherham. But I feel like with the Millers, there's so much heart in them, and you sort of know what you're going to get in every game. And I think that's probably the difference between ourselves and them, where there's just that inconsistency about Blues. We've had a couple of times this season where we've put together back-to-back wins and things have started to look better, and then Karanka changed things up and all of a sudden it feels like you're back to square one. It'd be interesting to see what happens to Rotherham. Unfortunately, sending my best wishes to them in terms of the COVID outbreak at the football club. I hope from a human perspective they recover well from that, and it'll be interesting to see how that influences their form between now and the end of the season. But I think it'll be touch and go between ourselves and Rotherham.
I mean, you've got one big game just before the end of the season away at Rotherham, which is going to be absolutely huge in terms of the football club's future, I would imagine, and ownership issues have surrounded Birmingham for what feels like forever now, and a relegation to League One could be really, really damaging.
I mean, I'd like to kind of touch on that, because I think for a long time, just after relegation from the Championship, there were financial issues at the club, and where there wasn't any money. And I don't think the last few years that's been the case. If anything, we've overspent. And I just think since we've been relegated to the Championship, we've never had a good budget and a good manager simultaneously. We've either had good managers like Chris Hughton and Gary Rowett, Gary Monk, working well with their hands tied, or we've spent a lot of money on potentially the wrong managers like Gianfranco Zola, Harry Redknapp, you probably put Karanka in that category as well. So you've got Trull. So that's been the issue for Blues. We've now got a fair amount of spending power, but I do think that there's a lack of footballing brain there. There's Juan Don Rehn, who's the current chairman. He's not really got much of a football mind. And I suppose with yourselves, you've got is it Nigel Howe, who's sort of runs the operations.
Yeah, he's been kind of sidestepped into less of a everyday role now. I can't remember the guy's name who's taken over as the director of football, but Howe is still kind of involved as a lesser light, I would say, at the moment.
Yeah.
He's certainly been involved for the last 15 years.
And he's clearly a respected figure at Reading, and I don't think Blues have that, and I think that's part of the problem. So, you know, the money's been there. We've been able to bring in some decent players, but I look at Luton, where they've freshened up their recruitment department by bringing in Jay Sothick from Blades Analytic. I'd love Blues to do something like that, but I just don't think there's the intelligence and the know-how and a boardroom level to be able to put the right structures in place, and that's the thing that worries me most, really.
Yeah, if you lack that kind of, I guess, intelligence and in initiative within the football club, a relegation can just completely cripple you. Money or no money, you only have to look at a team like Sunderland, who've been in League One now for what, 3-4 seasons. It's coming up to gone through multiple managers, different ownerships, and yeah, it's not a straightforward task to recover out of League One if you do go down. And I think a lot of Reading fans have obviously been worried about that over the last few years. Thankfully, this season, a bit of a reversal for us. Thankfully, looking towards the game on Wednesday. Well, before we look at the game on Wednesday, I guess if we look back to the game in December, that was one of Birmingham's few wins this season. I think you've got 8 in total. And probably one of Reading's weaker, now I look back, one of Reading's weaker results, 2-1 against Birmingham at home. Jan Terrell got 2 goals in the first half. And from memory, I don't think we defended either goal particularly well. One goal I seem to remember Jan Terrell had a goal which kind of jumped over, the ball jumped over Morrison's leg or McIntyre's leg. And Jan Terrell found himself very, very free in the box. Before Birmingham ended up down to 10 men and Lucas Schau missed the penalty, which is almost customary this season, unfortunately, with Lucas Schau.
It's the only thing he's got wrong, to be fair, Alex.
Yeah, I can't like knock him too much. If he's going to miss penalties, but he's going to score 20 goals a season anyway, then it's not a bad thing, really, is it? So, I mean, obviously, you'll be hoping for another Blues victory on Wednesday, but realistically, what kind of score prediction should we put you down for, Gab, for Wednesday?
It depends. I mean, I think if Blues get a new manager in, but if it's theoretically, if Blues appoint Neil Harris, appoint in the next few days, and he's in the dugout by Wednesday, and he whips the team into shape, drills a bit of passion into the side with the way he talks and stuff like that. I mean, we don't know that it's going to be, you know, this is just theoretical. But if the new manager who does come in rejuvenates the team, then I think there's a possibility that Blues can compete with Reading, because we've seen yourselves slip up at Wickham a few weeks ago just before the good run you've been on at the moment. I mean, obviously helped you a lot having the likes of Yeardham and Richard back, which is a bit of a factor. But if pushed, I'd probably say 2-1 to Reading. But I just hope that if there is a change in the dugout, there is a reaction from Blues. And I think if there's a good performance, then maybe we can take a bit of encouragement from that.
I would take a 2-1 to Reading on Wednesday. That would be ideal. As long as Reading can pick up 3 points, again, at this point of the season, I'm not too worried about performances by now. It's just picking up enough points that we make the playoffs.
Do you think you can make top two, or do you think
I think after the result against Forest at the weekend, I think that the top two is probably a bit of a distant dream. Even we've still got Watford and Norwich and Cardiff to play, but we'd have to win probably 8 maybe 9 of our remaining 10 games. I just don't think it's realistic to see that happen. I think maybe we could finish 4th or maybe 5th. It seems it just seems unlikely though to
do think it's finishing if you do now. I do think though that you're probably better than a lot of the teams competing for an outside playoff spot. I think you're maybe not quite in the automatic category, but I think I feel like you're pretty nailed on for finishing that top.
We would like to hope so. Fingers crossed. Good luck, Gab, to Birmingham for the rest of the season. Just not on Wednesday. thank you for joining us, Gab, and thank you everybody for listening. We'll be back on Wednesday night after the game with a post-match podcast. During the game, we'll have our regular watch along, and straight after, we will be live on Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook for our post-match reaction. So make sure you join us then. Cheers.